We're very fortunate to have creative people in the world because oftentimes they can get an idea across better than the rest of us, and perhaps this is an example of it. Someone said that the book of Leviticus is the Bible's Bermuda Triangle because that's where Christians get lost. I believe that very much. And so sometimes when we think about the book of Leviticus, it's so confusing to us, and I would add to that, that probably the book of Leviticus is the leading cause of death for Bible reading programs. So maybe where that is, where you are right now, if you're doing a Bible reading, it may be that you're just coming to it or navigating your way through it, or maybe you read a chapter and it scared you off. Well, this evening, what I'd like to do is to talk about the book of Leviticus. This is a book that is very important to us. And one of the reasons I believe that Christians oftentimes don't really get it is because they read the book from a Christian perspective. And while that is important, that's not really the first way to read the book. The first way is to read it like it was written to the original audience. And so, as we would do with anything, we look at the book and we say, well, how does it relate to the text around it? How did those original readers read it? And then we ask, how do secondary readers read it? So this evening, I'm not going to do so much preaching as I am just talking. I want us to just discuss a few things about the book of Leviticus, to look at it from somewhat of an overview perspective, to think about some reasons that God has included it for us, and a reason why we don't need to skip it when we come to it in our daily reading programs, but instead to realize that in many ways this is an essential book, not only for the understanding of the time period, but also to understand things from a New Testament perspective. So let's talk a little bit about where the book fits in. To introduce this, think about it as you would with any kind of history. Let's take secular history, for example. Let's say that we have someone who says, I just really love studying World War II. Well, that's an interesting area of American history, but you've got two different kinds of people here. You may have some people who say, well, I enjoy reading about this battle or this personality or that personality, but they're not terribly serious about World War II. It's just kind of some of the incidentals associated with it. But someone who's really interested in it understands that to get the full comprehension of what happened in World War I or World War II, you've got to understand World War I. You've got to understand the Great Depression. You've got to understand European politics. You've got to understand American politics. And it's when you get all of these things together, then suddenly you begin to see how this fits with everything else. May I suggest to you that that's how we must view the book of Leviticus. That as we think about it, the book of Leviticus stands amidst a group of writings that must be taken together. Have you ever noticed there's really no introduction to the book of Leviticus? It's just kind of as if you start reading. That's how it's supposed to be. Because what we've got are the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, that fit together as one major narrative. So when God begins, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, what we find in the remainder of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy is a continuous storyline of which Leviticus is a part. And though it's composed of all of these laws, it is a piece of narrative that makes sense when it's put into its proper context. Thus, when we look at this, we're understanding that it's part of this larger writing. And throughout the Bible, we've got reminders of this. 2 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, they're all telling us that the law is fitting in into this larger context. Now, as we think about it from that perspective, let's just back out a bit and think about the Pentateuch in general. Let's think about those first five books together. As the children of Israel received these, they were, of course, the original readers. That's the original audience. So what were they supposed to get out of this? As they were reading Genesis on through Deuteronomy, what was it that they, as the original audience, were to understand? Well, the first thing is God is saying, I want you to know who you are. Now remember, they're about to go into the land of Canaan. They're about to go in and overtake all of these different nations. And so God says, you're going to come across cultures and people, and they're going to have stories that are kind of similar to the truth. You're going to hear about creation stories, and some of them are going to sound kind of close to what you know. But I want you to know the real story. Thus, Genesis 1 and 2. Then he says, I want you to know about who you are. How did you come about as a nation? And so we follow the great flood and the sons as they go into the world and begin populating until the time that we come to Abraham. And God says, here, I want you to understand not only who you are, but also I want you to know that you're not just anybody. You're not an ordinary people, because I've chosen you for a specific reason. I've chosen you as heirs of this promise that I made to your ancestor Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob and to the patriarchs. You're the ones who will be fulfilling what it is, in a sense, that I promised them. So know who you are. Know that you're not ordinary. And know that I am working through you for the redemption of the world. We forget that sometimes. But to get an entire picture of the plan of salvation, what we've got to do is to back way up. And we've got to see how God is slowly unfolding this through the years. And I tell you, when we get to the book of Leviticus, there's a lot of unfolding going on there. Not that we're reading about Jesus, but what we're seeing are pictures of what one day is going to happen. And all of these sacrifices and all of this blood that's flowing, that's a picture of God's redemption. And as we look at the Pentateuch, God is saying, as you go into this land, it is paramount. It is essential that you trust me as your God. So why do they need stories like Joseph? Here's a man who trusted. Why do they need to know about Moses? Here's a man who had to grow into that trust. And so as they look, here is a very compact history from the beginning of time to where they're about to go in. And God is saying, okay, you look at this and you see how all of these people trusted in me. And that's what I expect of you. And the way that I'm going to know that you trust me is by how obedient you are to me. And so they had to act in such a way as to ensure that God's presence was going to be there. God is saying, you can't just be anybody. I've called you to be my special people. You're to be my people. I'm going to be your God. And so in these first five books written specifically to the children of Israel, God is saying, this is what I expect of you. I came across an interesting quote. A man by the name of John Selhammer said this concerning the question that Moses asked God, who will I say sent me? He says the short answer he was to give them was simply, I am has sent you. The long answer was the Pentateuch. That's a good way of viewing these first five books of the Bible. And so here we are at the very outset of time. God is saying, this is what I expect of you. Now let's bring it back into a more narrow focus as we think about the book of Leviticus and the place that it holds in the Bible. What are the things that you and I need to be understanding from this book? What are the things that we need to gain from it? Well, the answer to that very much is what Israel did. An understanding of various things relating to God and service to Him. And so one of the big things is you're going to be able to see who God is. Now, this kind of dovetails with our lesson this morning. If you'll recall, this morning we talked about how that God is saying to us, you can't compare me to anybody else. So let me tell you what God looks like. Let me tell you all these characteristics of God. What makes me God? What makes me a righteous God? Well, very similar things here in the book of Leviticus. And so this book is providing us insight into the nature of God. Again, let me bring one more quote out here. This says, there is no book in the whole compass of the inspired volume which the Holy Spirit has given us that contains more of the very words of God than Leviticus. It is God that is the direct speaker in almost every page. His gracious words are recorded in the form wherein they are uttered. You ever thought about Leviticus like that? Here we've got all of these direct quotes from God. They're not going through a prophet. It's nobody explaining to us what God means. God is saying, these are my commandments. This is what I'm expecting of you. And for that reason alone, we should find this book to be very, very important to us within our study. So let's just think about how we see that playing out. I'm taking this from the ESV. The results would be similar, though maybe not exact in other translations, but it would be close. The term the Lord appears 282 times in this book. 282 times we have a direct allusion to the fact that God is either talking or being talked about. We add to that 49 more times when he says, I am the Lord, which is a very important phrase in the book of Leviticus, isn't it? Because oftentimes what's going on is God is saying a command. He's saying, this is how I expect it to be done. And the reason for it is, he says, I am the Lord. Let's just take a quick look at an example of that. So many of them we could see. But if you go to Leviticus chapter 18 and begin with me in verse 1, it says, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, I am the Lord your God. You shall not do as they did in the land of Egypt where you lived, and you shall not do as they do in the land of Canaan to which I am bringing you. You shall not walk in their statutes. You shall follow my rules and keep my statutes and walk in them. I am the Lord your God. So many times it was not some long answer of, well, now this is why I expect this of you. Now, at times God will unpack it. And God will say, here's my motivation and my reason behind it. But many more times God will say, if you trust me, then you do it because I'm God, because I'm the Lord. And so here throughout this book, that's exactly what God is saying. He's saying, you do this because of who I am. Now, one of the big things about the holiness or about the nature of God that we see here is His holiness. This is going to be a key part of the book, that as we look at what God is saying to do, the reason He's saying it is because I, your God, am holy, and I have expectations for you. And thus, this very central theme in the book, again, if we want some statistics, 81 times in English, we're going to find the term holy or holiness. I understand that within Hebrew, it may even be a little bit more than that. But here, again, a huge number of times, God is talking about what makes me holy, what will make you holy, how a holy God and His holy people interact with each other. So a very important thought here. But as well, He's going to use that to illustrate that there's a great difference between God and man. While God is making this gracious offer of salvation, what He's also saying is, there is a distinction between us also. And for you to become holy as I am holy, you've got to understand the necessity of obeying me just as I command you to. God has never been a God of rote obedience. He's never said, I'll be perfectly satisfied if you just obey me. I don't care what you think. I don't care what your view of my law is. If you'll just obey me, everything's okay. You never find that. God is saying, what I want you to see is my holiness. And I want you to see that for a holy God, you too must be holy. You must bring yourself to the standard that I am requiring. And so over and over and over within the book of Leviticus, God is saying, be holy for I am holy. Now, is it any surprise to us? Peter picks that up and he uses that in the New Testament. Why? Because God doesn't have any different expectations today. The same kind of holiness that God wanted then, God is also demanding now. God is saying, this is what I want from you. Again, let's note a quote here. R.K. Harrison, in his commentary on Leviticus, said, the general legislation of Leviticus shows that all life is lived under the watchful eye of God. And as a result, it makes no artificial differentiation between what is holy and what is secular. A holy people will, by their lives, transform mundane things into beautiful and acceptable offerings to God. Let me put one asterisk here. Sometimes today you'll run across folks who will say, well, life is just worship. Everything in life is just worship. And so there's no distinguishing between what we're doing tonight and what you're going to be doing tomorrow morning on the job. That's false. That's wrong. And we can prove that very easily from the Word of God. Now, with that asterisk aside, how do you and I live our lives? We live our lives not as a holy being on Sunday and a secular being on Monday, right? What we are on Sunday is what we're to be for the rest of the week. And so when I present myself to God, what I'm saying is how I treat my family, how I operate on the job, how I drive down the road, how I talk to the guy at Walmart, everything about me is to reflect holiness. That's the message of Leviticus. I know we don't realize Walmart's mentioned in the book of Leviticus, but in a sense it is, right? Here God is saying, wherever you are, whatever you're involved in, you are to be holy. You are to be someone who is standing up for me, who's an example of someone who is on my side, thus the nation of Israel, God's chosen people. Now, do we understand why God would get so angry with them? When they would go off into wickedness, God had explained over and over, you're to be like me. You've been called out of the world. And so the message here is you make sure that you maintain this holiness. But that's God's department. God gets to say what's holy. It's not up to you and me to define it for Him. We're the ones who are listening. Now, I think that's really very well illustrated in the book of Leviticus with all this business of clean and unclean. You ever wondered about that? You look in the book of Leviticus and it says, now you can eat this, but you can't eat that. And when you plow, don't put two different animals together. And when you sew, don't join two different kinds of fabric. And, you know, if we're kind of looking at that from a Christian perspective, we're saying, now, what's the moral issue of sewing two different kinds of cloth together? What sin am I creating by using an ox and a donkey to plow my fields? That's not the point. All of these things are ways God was training His people to listen to Him. For His people to understand that there are differences that must be made. And if God has declared something clean, you consider it clean. If God has declared something unclean, you consider it unclean. So here we have God almost as we would think about a parent who's in very incremental steps teaching a child how to behave. God is starting here and He's saying, okay, let's get into practice here about listening to me. About when I say something, what you're to do or what you're to not do. And thus we find this book showing us so clearly how God tried to do that. Now what's the other side of this? Well, if God is teaching what's holy, God is also teaching what's sinful. And so within the book of Leviticus, we're finding a great deal here about the nature of sin, and what that is the abandonment of the holiness of God. It's where you look at God and you hear what God has to say and you say to Him, no thanks. Now, what was going to be the great temptation for the children of Israel? Remember, when they're receiving all of this, the Pentateuch, they're right there on the doorsteps of Canaan. They're about to go into a land where they are going to be tempted and tried, and all these different nations who have all kinds of abysmal pagan practices. And God is saying, now, let's be very clear that if you go after things that are contrary to me, you cannot be a holy people. You will be a people who are in sin. And sadly, we know how that story ends, don't we? We understand what happened. Yet what does God show in the book of Leviticus? He shows concerning this idea of sin that first of all, it's in man-to-God relationships. What's the greatest command? Moses says, you shall love the Lord your God with all you got. Heart, soul, mind, strength, all you got. So what if someone abandons that concept, that sin? What if someone says, well, I know what God said, but I don't want to do it. That's sin. And so here within Leviticus, it is one of the clearest pictures we can find in the entire Bible where God says, this is the way I expect it, and if you don't follow that, then I consider you to be wrong in my sight. But what was the second greatest command? You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And so this abandonment of holiness also applies man to man. And thus we find again all of these regulations and laws relating to one another. I tell you, look sometime at how many times God is saying you take care of the poor and the widows and the strangers and the orphans. And he's talking about how you take care of your fellow man. And what he will say is that if you abandon them, that's sin. That's a departure from holiness. And so what is Leviticus showing us? What it's showing us is, look, God's got expectations, and if you don't meet them, there's consequences for that. And thus, that consequence is separation and death. Now, if you'll recall how we started all of this up, we said that Genesis through Deuteronomy kind of fits together as a unit. It fits together as one chunk of literature. And what this should do is take us right back to Genesis chapter 3. As God is trying to give these people a picture of what sin is all about, he gives them the account of Adam and Eve. God told Adam and Eve what not to do, and they disobeyed him, and there was consequence. And thus God is saying here in Leviticus, when you disobey me, when you violate my holiness, then there's going to be consequence also. And there are sections of the book where we can go to, and God has list after list where he says, now, if you disobey me, this is what happens. This is what happens. This is what happens. He wanted them to understand what would take place if they did not respect who he is and what he wants. Now, let's continue that thought for just a minute. Because another idea that we have within the book is how God deals with sin. All right, so we've got holiness defined in the book. We've got sin defined in the book. Now God's going to say, here's how I deal with it. And one of the big things we see in Leviticus is where God is saying to the people, sin is not an unimportant topic. Don't think that's sub-tier. Don't think that's a footnote. Sin's a big deal. Sin is going to make the difference between where you are in your relationship to me. And thus what we find God doing here is saying, look, if you violate these things, if you do not maintain this holiness that I'm telling you, but you still want to be right with me, then what? Atonement's got to be made. There's got to be something to bring peace back between us, because what you've done is you've violated this holy covenant that I made with you. Though I said I wanted you for my people, you've said I don't want you for my God. But he says, if you change your mind, that's going to require an atonement. And the blood flows in Leviticus, doesn't it? That as we look at this, God is saying, okay, if this is what you do, this is a sacrifice. If you do this, this is the kind of sacrifice. If you break this law, this is the sacrifice. You know why? God was wanting them to understand that when you break your relationship with God, it's personal. You can't just pay somebody to take care of things for you. It's something that's got to cost you. You've got to see the blood flow because of that. And so though the language is oftentimes tedious to read, we must never miss the point of where God is saying sin requires death. There's no other way about it. Sin brings death. And thus that point is made so clearly for us within the book. And this redemption then can only come at a blood sacrifice. Now let's bring this forward just a bit. We've looked at where it fits. We've talked about who God is and His holiness and the danger of unholiness and the price that unholiness costs and how we're atoned for. All that's within the book of Leviticus. But as you and I think about it from the perspective of New Testament readers, it's also important for us, because as you begin looking in the New Testament, there's a whole lot of allusions back to the book of Leviticus. A whole lot of things here where the writers are going back and they're picking up these ideas. We reference the one by Peter, where he pulls this idea of you being holy as I am holy, and he applies it squarely to us. Though an Old Testament idea at first, he's saying this is what God has always expected. But perhaps the greatest blessing you and I find within this is the provision of the understanding of sacrifice. And not only the understanding of sacrifice, but also the contrast that that sacrifice of Leviticus has with Jesus Christ. Because as we look in the book of Leviticus, we find that sacrifices had to take place on a regular basis. Yet what do we find about Jesus Christ? The Hebrew writer says, "For if the blood of goats and bulls and the sprinkling of defiled persons with the ashes of a heifer sanctify for the purification of the flesh, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered Himself without blemish to God, purify our conscience from dead works to serve the living God?" When I teach the book of Leviticus, I oftentimes end it by saying, "Aren't you glad we don't live under that system?" And almost without fail, every head in the room does this. Because though God was concerned about His people, and though God showed His love, you and I can see the big picture. What they saw in part, we see in full. What they were involved in on a regular basis with sacrifice, we see fulfilled in the one perfect sacrifice of the Lamb of God. And thus, as we look at the book of Leviticus, it's a reminder for us of just how good we have it. But it also reminds us that just like the people then, blood had to flow for the sins that we committed.